Every ultimate experience Ireland has to offer is always within reach with a 182 BMW. The ultimate bowl of chowder, seasoned with Atlantic salt air, the ultimate swim spot, even the ultimate scenic shortcut that happily takes way, way longer. Experience the ultimate with a 24-hour test drive from your local BMW retailer. Because owning your new BMW is always within reach. Visit BMW182.ie.
Oh, yeah, it's Monday night, guys. It's about that time. Hey, listen, I want to put a big shout-out and thank you to everyone who checks out this program on Monday nights. We really, really appreciate it. The downloads have been through the charts lately, and the feedback has been incredible. So we really, really, truly appreciate all that and supporting me and supporting what I do. Do me a favor, like and subscribe on iTunes. We're also available on iHeartRadio, Stitcher, TuneIn, all the places you get your podcast from. But we're also live right here on Blog Talk Radio on Monday. So I hope you enjoy the show. Got a great guest tonight, all about travel, food, and motorcycles. It's going to be a good time. Hanging out with my man, the Vagabond Chef. Let's play some dramatic music.
There's a price to pay. Time for you to get down on your knees and pray. You can say goodbye to the good old days. They're never coming back. Watch your future fade.
What's going on, everybody? Happy Monday night right here on Plum Love Foods Live. It's your boy Chef Plum hanging out here with you. It's going to be a lot of fun tonight. We've got a great guest coming on the program. I can't wait to chat with the Vagabond Chef himself, my buddy Matt. He's an amazing guy. He's got a great story traveling all across the country. Seriously, like on a motorcycle with a backpack and a knife roll. All I can picture is the old Incredible Hulk episodes where Banner would walk away in the end. That's all I'm hearing. Like, that's what I can see. Like, being old Incredible Hulk music. Like, anybody else see that? That's what I see. And just, like, he's traveling the world like Kung Fu, trying to save people and help people. If that's what it was, I don't think so. What's going on, you guys? Hope your week is off to a great start here on a Monday. Hope your shift is done. Hope you're enjoying the program this evening. Maybe on your way home. Maybe you're cleaning up your station. Maybe you're doing, you know, maybe you're just having a cocktail. That's what I'm doing. I'm having a cocktail right now. I'm enjoying a nice canned rosé. We'll get to that in a few minutes. That's what I'm drinking. Because this week's going to be crazy. It's Memorial Day weekend, and I'm sure most of you have plans and probably have to work your ass off, but much like you, so do I. I will be spending my first weekend on the lovely, very eastern end of New York. The easternmost part of New York. I'll be out in Montauk this weekend working and drinking and doing my thing, which I'm very excited about. So I hope you guys are ready for a great weekend yourselves. We are back here in the Northeast after a crazy tornadoes and amazing storm hit. I was out without power for like 4 days. It was nuts. Then my generator broke and I was dealing with all that stuff. Listen, this is a problem. And this is a first world problem. So let me tell you something. It's weird when you spend your entire life with your cell phone with you. You know, our iPhones, our Androids, whatever we have, where we have everything at our fingertips, everything, and you're attached to the world. And the second that that's all taken away, dude, it feels so weird because with the storm that hit here knocked down so many poles and power poles and telephone lines, and my road's a C-shape, so we had a tree down on one side and two telephone poles knocked down on the other. So we were actually trapped inside of our road for a day. And that whole day, because when the things go down, all the repeaters that are on the telephone poles, like, we lost service. So I spent that. It's just weird. I mean, it really was weird. I mean, we didn't really have power in the house. I mean, I got the generator fired up, so that helped a little bit, but didn't really, you know, I couldn't cook a whole lot because I had my stove, but, like, I didn't have my Like, we lost the freezer because it's on two circuits. Learned that. But I didn't have my hood, so I couldn't, like, saute anything major. But, you know, I did some grilling and whatnot, but it was fun. I spent the day. It's almost like a good thing. I spent the day. It's as our buddy Chef Brian Duff, I was present. Spent the day hanging out. We put a puzzle. That's right, ladies and gentlemen, a puzzle. Like, all the different pieces, 500 pieces, makes one big picture on the table. And me and the family, we worked on the puzzle. And I found out that's not how my brain works. I was so frustrated. I couldn't even focus. I'm not doing a puzzle. I don't know if you guys do puzzles, but I can't do a fucking puzzle. That's for damn sure. Got a great show tonight, man. I'm really excited to talk to Matt. Matt's an amazing guy. He's got a great story. He knows a lot about food. I met Matt at the Pro Start. And we've talked a lot about that recently, but that event really just kind of hit home with me in a very special way. And I really love that event, and I want to take a bigger part of it next year and see what I can do to help out. I think I can do a lot. So we'll talk to Matt more about that too and see how his event was, his experience was. I think he hated it. I think it's what, no, I'm kidding. He didn't at all. Before we get going tonight, I was looking at some stuff here in the old food news. And one of the things that kind of ran across the intranet today was, I guess it's a anniversary or something like that of the Apollo 13. And one of the things I thought that was funny about it is that the Apollo 13 astronauts, when they were up in space, had mentioned that he had just made himself a hot dog sandwich with some ketchup. And I guess that as opposed to people being upset about the fact that it was a hot dog sandwich and taking issue with that, it was the fact that he put ketchup on his hot dog sandwich, which is pretty funny. And I think they even corrected him and said, aren't you supposed to put mustard on that hot dog sandwich? And he said, nope, he did ketchup. So it's pretty funny. But when I was reading it, I think what stood out the most to me was the fact that he called it a sandwich. It's a hot dog. It's a hot dog. Like, are we in a world now where these things, I don't know, like back then, did it matter? Did anyone actually talk about that stuff? Did anybody, like, think about these words and how they're being used and what they're saying and whatnot? I don't think so. I don't. But in this day and age, you know, someone slips up and says the wrong word and we jump all over top of them. You know, dude, you can't say that. That's not the right word. He's using the wrong lingo. I'm going to go back to Brooklyn and pull my snorkel and my pants over my skirt or whatever. You know, that's just me. That's my hipster. That's hipster plum. I'm going to grow one beard, but just one little beard on one side of my face and tell the guy that he can't talk about hot dogs. That's my plan. But I thought it was interesting because what else? I mean, I guess theoretically it's a sandwich. I mean, I guess if you think about it, it's a piece of meat in between two pieces of bread. But, well, I don't know. I mean, I'm getting told now that it's a subgenre of a sandwich. I don't know if you can have a subgenre of the sandwich. So I ended up after I thought about it for a minute. I didn't spend a lot of time thinking about it, but it was what stuck out to me the most when I saw the article. So I thought about it and I said, well, let me put it on the Instagrams that we came up with, because you know, you can do those polls on Instagram. So I did a poll on the old Instagram, and it's interesting because a lot of people seem to agree that it's not a sandwich. I have a 70%, and this is, it's only been up for a few minutes, 38 minutes actually, 70% of you say that it is not a sandwich, that, and 30% say yes, it is a sandwich. And I actually had one DM from somebody saying maybe. I guess you could take a maybe, right? I don't know. Our good friend Dimitri says yes, it's a sandwich. Grill Mama, Instagram icon herself, says no, it is not a sandwich. Of course, our guest tonight said it is a sandwich. Steph Cooks, Chef Stephanie up there in Canada, says yes, sandwich. And of course, Chef Dan, the commando himself, says it is a sandwich. Shoes for Crews, they make great shoes for everybody in the kitchen. They say yes, it is a sandwich, which I thought was interesting. It's funny though, people start coming out of the woodwork when you say certain things like this and get very angry and get very, very aggressive in their answers. I've had a couple of DMs with giant capital letters N-O with an exclamation point. Well, it got me thinking because I was like, okay, well, it's not a sandwich, even though it's between two pieces of bread. How many other foods are there that we just fuck up in the name there? And I came up with a couple I want to run by you guys. I mean, we'll do a couple here, and then I'll do a few with Chef, and they'll be fun to talk about. But I think, first of all, one of my favorite cities, Boston, known for a lot of great foods, the Boston Cream Pie, right? Boston Cream Pie is completely named wrong. Number one, it's not a pie. It's not a pie at all. It's Boston cream. It's cream between like vanilla pudding or custard between yellow, right? With chocolate fondant on top of it. There's no pie there. There's no pie and chocolate in Boston cream pie. That's what we call it. I don't know. I don't know why. It's just what we call it. Sweetbreads. We all know what sweetbreads are. We're chefs, right? We all love sweetbreads. Sweetbreads are delicious. It's the thymus glands of the animal. And it's used like a calf or a lamb. I mean, but it's not at all. It's not a bread. And it's not actually really that sweet either, to be honest with you. And it's a bitch to clean. I mean, I think a sweetbread sounds like something delicious and yummy, which it is. Sweetbreads are yummy and delicious. However, it's not a bread, and it's not very sweet either. So that's one, you know, it's all in the naming of things. I feel like when they came up with these food names, the marketing was just not quite there. Oh, my God. I sent messages now from our friend Dimitri. Dim, I don't even know what you sent me. I'll check it out in a second. But he's just saying, all I see is a picture of a hot dog, and for fuck's sake. So that always is pretty fun. Let's talk about white chocolate for a second. White chocolate has no cocoa powder in it, which means it's not fucking chocolate at all, right? Cocoa powder is what makes chocolate chocolate. But instead, it's made with cocoa butter, which comes from the bean, milk, and sugar and whatnot. But I tell you what, it's not fucking chocolate. It can't be chocolate. It has to contain cocoa, and it does not contain that. Mincemeat, right? Mincemeat, one of those great English-style desserts, delicious mincemeat pie, you know. But there's no meat in it whatsoever. It's a combination of like chopped nuts and dried fruits, things like that. A very, very festive dessert, you know. That's what a mincemeat pie is. But it's funny because how many of these fucking things can we have in our life that just have, I mean, it's not at all what it actually is. I mean, we really need to, maybe we could be the generation of cooks that change this sort of stuff. Corned beef, seriously, let's talk about corned beef. There's no corn in corned beef at all, right? None at all. You cure a brisket, it's salty. I think the word corned beef even sounds gross. Like, maybe we should just call it, like, cured brisket. Like, beef brisket sounds amazing to me. But corned beef sounds like a disease. It sounds like it's something you get removed from your foot. Like, it's just, it's gross. Can we change that name officially? I'm going to send that to the powers that be that we're going to change that name. Fucking corned beef. It is the worst thing. I'm getting angry now. Like, why would they think that's a good fucking name? Corned beef sucks. The dish is delicious. I love corned beef. It tastes amazing. The name is garbage, though. The name is fucking garbage. Corned beef. That's terrible. Boston cream pie. Listen, now I'm going to get all angry about this. And a hot dog? Yeah. It's not a sandwich. Not in my book. It's a hot dog. I know. Meat between two pieces of bread, condiments. I got you. Remind me one day to tell you all about my new invention. It's called a taco dog. Yeah. I invented taco dogs. True story. All right, you guys. Check it out. I'm going to play a tune here. I'm going to pour myself a glass of this wine. And come back here with our guest tonight, the Vagabond Chef. Matt's awesome. Matt Welch is a great guy, man. We met him at the Pro Start Nationals this year. What a sweetheart of a guy. Great story. Chose to go see Avengers as opposed to hang out with us. But that's okay. I think that might have been my idea. Nonetheless, it's a great guy. Check it out, guys. If you haven't done so yet, please rate, review, and subscribe. Throw us a rating on iTunes. It means so much. It makes such a big difference on so many things. It would be really awesome if you could do that for us. That would seriously be dope. Anyway, it's your boy Chef Plum. Stay right there. We'll be right back with the Vagabond Chef himself, Matt Welch. Be right back, guys.
For friends like you, who needs enemies? You ain't right, you ain't never. I'm cutting you loose, I don't need this misery. Your soul is toxic, you ain't no friend of mine. No! You talk real trash when I'm not around. Build yourself up, you gotta tear me down. You'll have to excuse me, I better. Your teeth, your tongue, got your neck. Every chance you get, you're gonna stab my back.
A little Social Distortion for your Monday night here. Get a little feedback. People love a little Social D. It's funny because I think as a cook, you kind of have to love Social Distortion because it's almost like we are, you know, we're punk rock, man, as cooks. That's what we are. We really kind of are against the system on our own, and we come up with our own ways of doing things, but we're like this band of brothers and sisters who just work together to complete a task every day and every night, and that's what we do. So I think it's kind of very punk rockish, you know? I mean, in my opinion, I don't think anything's more punk rock. The gentleman's going to be on here in a few seconds talking to us. The Vagabond Chef, Chef Matt. He's a guy I met a couple weekends ago at the Pro Start, man. And we kind of hit it off right off the bat, man, by believe it or not, hitting on each other. But that's kind of what chefs do. No, I'm kidding. Well, I'm not kidding. But you guys know what I mean. Just being goofy toward each other. And ended up hanging out, man, having a great time. And you learn a lot about these guys. And you learn a lot about Matt. And Matt's a great guy. And seems to be a great cook. I haven't food, but I'm guessing he is if he was judging Pro Star, for God's sake. But he's also traveled the country, which is amazing. Coming up with great stories and started a great blog you can check out at thevagabondchefrides.com. You can check it out there. You can also follow him on Instagram at thevagabondchef on Instagram. Follow him there. It's all about beards, motorcycles, food, punk rock. But here's the thing, too. All these things, and he's a sweetheart of a guy, super nice cat, a guy to making my friendship kind of grow with, because this dude's awesome. Can't wait to talk to him right now. The one and only Vagabond Chef. Chef Matt, brother, good evening. How are you?
What is up, Chef Plum? Sam, thank you for having me on. I'm so happy to be with you tonight.
You're the man, dude. The second we met and I knew your story, I was like, yeah, I got to get this guy on because I want to hear his story about on a motorcycle traveling across country. But it's awesome. It's funny because when I met you the first time, when I saw you in the room at the Pro Start thing, they were busting your balls about wearing a black chef coat. And it's so ironic because that's what I normally wear is black all the time.
Right.
The heads up to wear white. I guess you didn't.
Well, someone mentioned it to me, and I don't have, like, I have white chef coats that I wear outside for vending in the summer, but I don't have, like, a nice, and I guarantee you Dr. Chesler would have been more upset about my white one than the black one that I wore, because it was short-sleeved, had, like, you know, it has, like, a mesh back, so I wore what nice. I got, man. I don't have a lot of resources right now, so I got to make do with what's available, you know?
Listen, you looked great in it. It worked out fine for everybody, man. It's just fun to see, you know. You're a big guy, and you wore that toque well on your head, man. I appreciate that. Like, you know, just it's funny because you look at guys. I mean, even myself and you, like, we can, you know, we're both large guys, and we're both clearly over 6 feet, big guys.
Right.
You know, I have purple hair, blue hair, and you know, I have a pretty deep voice, and you're a big guy with a beard, like very. You can be very intimidating looking, but at an event like we were just at with ProStar, that's the furthest from what we want to be. We want these guys to feel comfortable and want to be able to talk, right?
Right, absolutely. You know, and that's the first time I've ever worn a toque in my life. So I'm glad that I pulled it off. There's a lot of faking it until you make it in what I do.
Hell yeah.
But it's just such a great program. And, you know, once I heard the justification behind the white coat and everything, I'll pony up. I'll get a white coat for next year. It's cool.
Dude, Amazon, they're like $14. You can get one. I bought one like the day before.
Yeah, I mean, I totally understand. And it's all for the kids. It's all for the students and what they're doing there. And I want to honor that. My individuality is not that important.
Thank you. I agree completely, man. So listen, tell us about, if you could tell us what Vagabond Chef means in two sentences. Can you do that? Like, what does that mean? Then I'll give you a bigger platform to describe it in a minute. But, you know, to kind of sum it all up.
The Vagabond Chef in two sentences would be, it's all about travel and learning. I mean, that's as simple as I can make it. I really enjoy traveling and I really enjoy learning. I always say that I'm kind of like a shark. And if I just stop swimming, if I stop learning, I'm going to die.
That's a little dramatic, don't you think?
I can be a little dramatic. I'm a melodramatic person. That's just something you're going to have to get to love about me, brother.
Nice. So tell me about, you've been doing this now in this business for what, a little over 15 years now, is that right?
Yeah, something like that. It's been hit or miss. You know, I've kind of focused on cooking, working with youth, and some construction over the course of my adult life. We'll put that adult life in big quotes. But cooking is what I'm best at.
A restaurant.
right, yeah. I'm faking the adult life, too. Cooking is just what I'm best at. It's what's the most fulfilling. And when I... I was actually pursuing a doctoral program in somatic psychology when I lived in Idaho, and I was working I was starting out as a line cook at a cross country ski lodge. And I was like, man, this just makes sense. It fits me. It's fulfilling. I can do this well, you know, and I just really started, I scrapped the graduate program and I just poured everything I had into cooking, into the kitchen.
Yeah, I think one of the best things about cooking in a kitchen too, man, for me and working a line that I remember the most is that, you know, it doesn't matter, black, white, red, male, female, Jewish, Catholic, none of that matters in the kitchen. We don't care. Just we all have a goal. We got to get through tonight and get through service. That's all that matters. Can you do your station? Great. I don't care if you're an octopus. Can you do your station?
It's the last great meritocracy.
Yeah. Wow.
We really earn our chops every day. Well, English lit major, brother. I apologize.
No, it's a good freaking word. But, you know, there's none of that other stuff matters. It just doesn't matter. Growing up in kitchens, it's amazing how much me personally, I never really realized that, you know, until I started like just kind of paying more attention to the outside world. We just never cared about that. And none of that shit mattered. But now, and especially in the world and divided world we live in these days, it's funny to see how much that stuff matters.
Yeah, it's weird to me. And the more and more now that I'm the face of my business and I've had to step out of the shadows of the kitchen, so to speak, and to continue to be melodramatic, you know, now I'm like dealing with quote unquote normal people. And it's really odd. I do my best. And I'm just like, wow, I, it's weird sometimes because you don't know how to interact with like normals.
But like, you know, before I get you telling me about the normals, I want to kind of see, you know, traveling 13,000 miles on a bike across country and looking at different restaurants, hanging out with different restaurants and stuff. Is what we just said there, like, is that kind of universal? Does it seem to kind of be the same thing everywhere?
Yeah, I think to a degree. I mean, one of the things that I really loved was I love making connections with people, you know, and at the heart of it all, that's what it's all about. And as I was traveling around and checking out different restaurants and culinary communities, like that rapport was instantaneous. I mean, you and I hit it off within seconds. You know, how many people were judging that ProStar competition? And we were instantly, yeah, we're coming from the same place. We have the same background. We go through the same trials. And you can get through so much of the veneer that we put on common social interactions, and you just strike down to the heart of the matter with folks, and there's just an instant connection, there's an instant rapport, and then what do you do with that, you know? And it's really cool, and it's exciting to be a part of.
Well, I think the coolest part is a great example of that was, you know, I went out to dinner and I'm hanging out all night with you know, it's like me, you know, from my background, and Chef Nick from Boston, his background, and you hung for a bit, then you went to the movies, we'll talk about that, but, you know, Chef Randy, who is like 70-some years old, he's just hanging, like, he can hang with the best of them, dude, he didn't care, he's hanging, I mean, he's a chef.
That guy was dope, he was awesome.
That dude was awesome, and just the different degrees of people, but none of it mattered, we were all cooks, and to me, the word cook is not a bad thing. We're all fucking cooks, man, and we're here to help, you know, do one goal. And just to see that and hang with that, it really kind of invigorates you as a chef to just say, you know what? I mean, none of this other bullshit matters. Like, it just doesn't matter. Like, we're all here to do the same thing. I love that. I love that about the whole event. I just – it's so invigorating to see that.
Well, and I've never been a joiner or someone who's, like, a group, part of a group, you know? And then I find this – you know, Island of Misfit Toys that we're all part of in our own totally unique and different ways. And it's like not only cool, but encouraged.
Dude, it's exactly what it is. You know, it's like you're all very unique, but we're all the same. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. No, it totally does somehow. It works. Like that's who we are. It's what we are. And it's what makes us good.
Right. Right. And I tell you, a lot of great chefs, man, are some of the most loyal people you ever meet. And your travels, man. So before, all right, tell me, I'm trying to figure out, like, what day you wake up and you're like, you know what? I'm going to get on my motorcycle and I'm just going to go. And we'll see what.
Oh, I remember that exact moment.
Tell us about it.
So I've always traveled. I've always been, you know, really into travel. I grew up, I had asthma and all kinds of health issues. So I read a lot. I was super into the work of Jack London. And I read about a lot about the frontiersmen and the people that settled our country. And I just wanted that. I wanted to explore and I wanted to get out to the edges of of what I knew and find more. And I've done that a lot. You know, I've traveled extensively all over the country. I've spent long amounts of time out of our country, exploring different places. And being the cross country or the sous chef at the cross country ski lodge was awesome. And that's, like I said, that's when things really began to coalesce for me and things started to make sense. But as it went on, I started feeling really stagnant. And my whole thing was a happy death. You know, I want to die a happy man. I don't want to have any regrets. And part of that for me is growth and learning and, you know, exploring the horizon and all of that. So I love writing. I love photography. I love cooking. And I had finally gotten a motorcycle, which had been a lifelong dream. And I was like, how do I put all these things together? You know, my love of exploring, my love of making connections. I was like, all right, I'm going to do this thing and I'm going to jump on my bike and I'm going to ride around and I'm going to go to different restaurants and meet people and talk to them about what are you doing? How are you doing it? And why are you doing it that way? And that'll give me a chance to learn a lot. I'm going to find some cool stories and I'll get to see more of the world, you know, and I was in my mid 30s at the time. So, you know, I felt like I was 15 minutes behind on my riding career, you know, and I had to get as many miles in the saddle as I could. So that's what I did. I took off on the bike and I went and explored places and it kept going better and better. And I ended up just keeping it up for that whole year.
But like, you know, just I tend to ask the questions that seem almost stupid, but it's the questions that people, I don't know, I feel like people always wonder, how do you pay for that? Like, how do you make money along the way?
That's a great question. I learned at a certain point that I don't give a shit about money. But what I learned was that money equals time and it equals energy. So I was always very, very frugal. I grew up super poor in rural Appalachia. You know, my old man poached deer for a while to keep us alive when I was a kid. So like I got it legit, you know, and that's just what we did. So I would squirrel money away. What's that?
But the money is necessity, though. I mean, we still have to have it, even small amounts.
Oh, absolutely.
Have to have it.
Absolutely. But I just live very frugally. And I learned that if my needs are fewer than my resources, I'm rich. You know, and all the traveling that I've done has been on a shoestring with no money and no resources. I've slept on loading docks. I've thumbed rides, you know, and that's honestly one of the things that kept leading me back to cooking because I got a shift meal.
Yeah, that's a good point, man. Wow. Wow. That's awesome. Go back because you got a shift meal, man. That's fucking deep.
Yeah.
But so when you're traveling, did you do a lot of camping? Like, did you carry some kind of little tent with you or something?
Yeah, I did. I camped a lot, especially in the beginning. I did two about 2,500 mile trips in the Northwest. And then when I went all the way across the country, I ended up circumnavigating the entire country on my bike. At that point, I started staying in some hotels. Just because I was on a kind of a schedule, which I hate to do when I'm traveling. I really like to have the, wonder what's down this road, or I'm going to do this, or I'm going to stay an extra day because I really connected with this person and I want to explore this more. Doing that big of a trip, I had to be a little bit more on a schedule. I had places to go and people to meet. So I would stay in a hotel occasionally, get a shower, et cetera.
Would you do it again?
Oh, absolutely. I'd do it tomorrow.
Man, that's interesting, man, because with the reach of this program, like the chefs that I could put you in contact with, that you actually could go and work a shift, have a shift meal, like it could be pretty awesome.
Yeah. Well, and that's one of the things I was really excited about personally with the ProStar competition was getting able to meet, having the opportunity to meet other great chefs and have those connections throughout the country that hopefully, you know, I can get something together. And as the restaurant gets more firmly established, my goal is to get back out there some and travel and cross-pollinate West Virginia's stories and my stories with the rest of the world and then bring their stories back home.
Well, let's talk about it a little bit, man. You're in West Virginia, now born and raised in West Virginia. Is that your stomping grounds?
Yeah, I grew up here, born and raised, as they say.
Nice. It's so funny. I'm born and raised in Virginia. I was born in Richmond, Virginia. How about that?
Oh, nice. Well, people always ask me if I live near there.
And you're like, yeah, no.
Yeah, West Virginia became its own state in 1863. It's only been a little while, so, you know, you may not have caught up on the news yet, but we are our own state.
I mean, so are you near, like, the Shenandoah Mountains and all that sort of stuff?
No, not at all. I'm in the northern panhandle, or as we like to call it, the middle finger of West Virginia. If you perch someone the bird and you leave your thumb hanging out, you basically have the shape of the state of West Virginia.
Oh, nice. I'm physically doing that right now, as I'm sure other people are right now.
Awesome.
At it going,
oh, okay, I hope so.
Nice. So you're more close to, like, you know, Pennsylvania and stuff, right?
Exactly. Yeah, we have Pennsylvania on one side, Ohio on the other. We're about 45 minutes from Pittsburgh.
Now, what's your football team?
I have absolutely no interest in sports, brother.
All right. Well, I'm a big Steelers fan. That's why I'm asking. I'm in Pittsburgh a lot. That's why I'm asking.
Well, it would be a Steelers if anybody. But yeah, I've growing up the way I did, not being able to be a very active, I never got into sports.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit, man. But I want to talk about the restaurant, and I want to talk about your upbringing. So let's start with the upbringing, man. You had mentioned your dad would sometimes poach deer just to keep the family fed and stuff. Talk about growing up, man, and kind of what was your story?
Well, I was born a month premature, and my lungs weren't fully developed. So I got life-flighted to a children's hospital, like, immediately, and spent the first few weeks of my life in an incubator. So my lungs were really bad. Asthma was bad when I was a kid. I've kind of grown out of that, thankfully, but I still have super bad allergies. And we lived on a dairy farm. My closest neighbor was a mile away. And it was great. I mean, I didn't know any other way of living, and I loved it. I loved crawling through the woods by myself. And I learned to read, and I was really into stories and books. And that's a love that I've carried throughout my entire life. But I guess now seeing how, you know, other people live or whatever, it is a little bit different. But, you know, you were mentioning earlier about first world problems, and having seen, you know, the Dominican Republic, I spent a month down there, and the way people live down there, and it's just, you know, your circumstances don't define your happiness, man, you know, and there are people in our country that live in some pretty dire straits on the daily. And, you know, I think that kind of spurs the rest of us to do a little bit more and to try to help out. And it also helps us keep a level head about things.
Yeah, man, that's crazy. So picture I have in my head is just you in, like, this small little cabin in the woods. Is that right? Or is it, like, just, I mean, you know,
it's not far. It's not, we lived in a two bedroom shack. I mean, it was bad enough that in the winter, my old man would wrap the entire house in plastic. You know, sometimes you'll plastic your windows over.
Sure.
We would wrap the whole house in plastic. We had a couple horses. It was a dairy farm, so there were tons of cows around. We put up hay. That was probably my first job, was rolling hay. Everything's on a hill in West Virginia, of course. So I'm rolling hay down the hill to the tractor when I was, like, in, you know, kindergarten or something. And it was just, it was a simple lifestyle. It was, you know, we got a lot of snow, so sometimes we would get stuck back there. But, you know, fortunately, I've got really rad parents, and they cared a lot about me, and they did everything they could to give me all the resources possible. And I have a great younger sister that, you know, we hated each other's guts for growing up, but we get along super well now. She helps me out at the restaurant, and she's good at all the things I'm not. So it's great to have her on board. And, you know, as you get older and older, I feel like family becomes more and more important.
Are your parents still around?
Yes, they are. Yep. Still around, still married.
That's great.
They just celebrated their 45th anniversary.
How about that, huh? Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, when I
came that's a paradigm to grow up with.
I feel like I've been married for 45 years after today. When I came home, I was like, Jesus Christ. Anyway, hey, I'm pushing 15 years this September. How about that?
Hey, man. Congratulations. That's great.
Not bad. So, dude, but, like, so you had this kind of a estranged upbringing where it was hardworking, loving family, but, you know, and where did the love for food come from? Was it as a kid? Like, was it, you know, having that venison, or was it, you know, did it happen later in life?
Well, my dad taught me how to cook. My dad and mom both taught me how to cook when I was young. And it was important to them that I'd be, especially to my old man, that I'd be self-sufficient. So he taught me how to sew. And I remember even being, when I was in like kindergarten, first grade, and crawling through the woods with a buddy, and it was like a rainy fall day, and we got back to the house, and I was like, I'm hungry. I'm going to heat up some soup. And it just blew his mind that I could operate a can opener and actually put a can of soup in a saucepan and put it on the stovetop and heat us up soup. But I wouldn't, wow. You know, I cooked on my own. I explored it to a degree, you know, but I didn't really take off until I started putting myself through college. I went to an art school right after high school. And then I started putting myself through college a few years after I graduated from that. And during that time period, I was had the opportunity to start working in the school cafeteria. And luckily enough, I was working for a couple of cool punk rockers who got me. And like, I kind of caught the bug from them.
Wow. That's crazy. But, you know, doing a cafeteria job is a great job. Like, that's a great place to learn, especially when you're just kind of breaking into the business. Because, one, it's hard to mess up. But, two, you really learn about making a lot of fucking food very quickly.
Right, right. Well, when I started out, I was in the pot sink, you know, and just slinging dishes. And I did that for several months. And then one night they put me actually in like on the dish machine, which had these like, you know, chewing like old redneck guys in there, which, I, you know, they were all right guys and everything. But I was in there loading trays into the conveyor belt. And the head chef and sous chef and I would all get together afterwards for beers. And I was telling them, I was like, guys, tonight, every tray I loaded in that conveyor belt, I was like, fuck this job. And they were like, dude, you can't quit. You work too hard. You're too good of a guy. You got to stick around. I was like, you guys got to get me on the line. Teach me how to cook, but get me up there on the grill, you know? Yeah. And that's how it started.
You know, it's funny. Cause once you find that, and that point that you're in working the dish machine, I totally get that. I think we've all been there. It sucks and we hate it. But it was funny, this past weekend I had a gig, and I'm not trying to take it towards me, but just to kind of tag your story a little bit. Our friend Dave, who a regular on the program here from Detroit, was down here, and he worked a gig with me Friday night. Catering gig, 50 people, beautiful house, like 6 pass apps, a small buffet, nothing crazy. It was a fun event. We had lots of hands. It was great. And we left that night, and Dave looked at me as we were driving home, and he goes, Chef, this is the first Friday night I've ever left work, and I'm not angry at anybody. And I was like, well, I think you might have found what you're supposed to be doing then, man, because I think that's what happened. You know,
yeah.
I think you pay your dues getting angry. I think it's part of what you're supposed to do to learn the business. I think that's how you fucking learn, you know, because it's not all going to be rainbows and unicorns, you know?
No, it definitely isn't. And anger is a useful emotion. I mean, we kind of demonize it in the current climate, you know, social climate, but anger got me through a lot of tough times. You know, I used to say, anger fuels my need for action. Action is my only salvation. You know, anger spurs me to do more. If I'm angry, what am I angry about? How do I fix it? I hope so.
I'm kidding. Well, and you can see it in your eyes just when you talk to you about the business a little bit, the conversations that we were having when we were at that museum at Johnson & Wales hanging out. Like, there's some history there. There's some miles behind those eyes. You know what I mean? You can look at somebody and you can tell just by having that conversation. And, you know, you kind of just verified it with me with that story, with starting on the dish, you know, pot sink and moving the dish and moving up. And, you know, those guys that work dish, I mean, you give them a plate of food and they'll rock all night long. And the second you put somebody back there who wants more, they're going to get pissed about it. And that's how it goes.
Right. Well, and what I'm doing now with the restaurant and, you know, being in downtown Wheeling, which is trying to revitalize itself and kind of reinvent what it is and what it means to our community. The past 4 years have been by far the toughest of my life, but they've also been the most fulfilling, you know, and I think all the years that I just kind of fucked off and traveled around the country and did whatever, they were great, but they weren't fulfilling. And I've always been driven to share my experiences with other people. And I found that, you know, sharing it through food, that's a great way to do it. And that's, you communicate with people on such a visceral level when they eat your food, you know, like it's, they don't, it's like, there's not words for it. You know, they don't know what's happening, but they know something's going on, you know, and you can see it in their eyes. And
It's such a powerful thing.
Just amazing,
I close every episode of the I close every episode of the program talking about how powerful it is and how important it is. And if you think about it, everything that we do in life that's important is it's around food. Like you go on your first date, you go eat. You know, you get married. We all
right.
eat. God forbid somebody dies. What do? We all eat.
Right.
Food is
right.
so important
right.
with everything that we have in life. Like it's, and actually, it's nice to see. I think we're at a point now with food in this world where it's next level. Like people have an appreciation for it. People understand. And I'm very general here, of course. There's some who don't still, but you know, where people get that it's kind of a little bit of an art to it. I think it's more science, but some people say it's art. But it's kind of a mixture of both. And people have a little bit of appreciation
yep.
for it. I guess what I'm trying to say. You know, there's definitely more of an appreciation for it now than even 10 years ago.
Right. Right. Well, we're fortunate enough to be in the backlash or the pendulum swinging to the other side of the spectrum from the big box store takeovers, and people are starting to see the value in what we do. And it's cool, man, you know, because, you know, it's like organic food when our parents were kids, that was just food, you know? And I think
food,
we're seeing
right.
a little bit of that now where like handcrafted food, my mission statement at Vagabond Kitchen is handcrafted food rooted in local community. Well, 20, 30, 40 years ago, everyone was doing handcrafted food. That was the only kind of food that there was.
Yeah. That's you
know?
On the dairy
so
farm.
Now,
you on the dairy farm rolling hay. That's what that is. That's where it comes
yeah,
from.
Yeah. Well, it is. And it's me that drinking
cow,
raw milk as opposed to drinking pasteurized skim, that bullshit they try to call milk, you know?
Right.
You're like,
right.
I'll never
can
forget the first time I
second?
Ate an organic.
Chef,
yeah.
Just for one second, can we stop? Can we stop fucking calling almond milk? Almond milk. It's almond juice.
there are no teeth on an almond.
You can't milk an almond.
Milk.
That's all I'm saying. You can't milk an almond.
I've tried.
Bullshit.
I mean, I've. It's, yeah, you're right. It doesn't happen.
You can find that video on YouPorn. Just look up Vagabond Chef almond milking.
I'd prefer you go through my Patreon because I'd like to make a little money off of it.
Sure. No, I apologize. You're right. I understand. No, but I think that your love of stuff like that comes from you, you know, being the kid who can open the can opener and can put some soup on the stove to reheat and make that happen. I think it comes from living on the farm and understanding where food comes from. So your dad having to struggle. I think it's where it all comes from, man. It makes total sense.
Well, and if there's anything that's mildly easier than being a farmer, it's being a chef. Because you know how hard we work.
Yeah, that's true.
But it is nothing compared to farming, brother. Holy moly. The,
yeah,
those bastards work their asses off. Yeah.
The hardest working people ever, especially in season. Holy shit.
And they're not, we get to be the rock stars. They don't get any appreciation whatsoever.
Yeah, no doubt.
The work they go through, the blood, sweat, and tears, you know, that instills a work ethic that's pretty hard to be beat. And that's my thing. Like, I may not be the smartest guy. I may not be the most talented guy, but I'm going to work my ass off.
Listen, so and absolutely, that's the way to do it. But so I had the wonderful opportunity of working under Sean Brock for a while, and
mm-hmm.
one of the things that you kind of learn from something like from a man like that is just the importance of showing respect to the food. You know, these farmers
yeah.
and these people who work so hard in these fields and season and whatnot. They bust their ass to give us the best possible product they can give us, right? They want to give us the best at the
right.
peak of when it's
absolutely.
Perfect, is when they want to give it to us. We as chefs now have a responsibility to treat it with the same respect that these guys who grew it treat it with. And I think that
I couldn't agree more.
You know, you're getting into a degree of chefs who just are understanding that more, who are learning more about that, who are doing more than just buying, you know, big ass boxes of shit from Cisco, like who get that we need to support our local farmers and look how amazing these ramps are. Look at these wonderful mushrooms. Look at this
right.
awesome fish from this fucking fisherman. Like, I think we're getting there, you know?
Right. Right. No, I think about responsibility a lot, man. And I, it's funny that you mentioned Kung Fu in the opener, man, because I love that show growing up and that sparked a lifelong interest for me in martial arts. And I've trained a lot throughout my life, and the whole idea of duty or obligation or, you know, that responsibility is written deep in me. And I do think we have a responsibility, you know, like that cow that became the burger that I served on your plate died for you to eat that burger, man. Like, that's heavy. That's that, you know, and it's my job to make the best hamburger you've ever had to honor that cow's life.
100%. 100%. You know, I mean, that cow, yeah, you couldn't be more right. It's a respect level of it. I had the privilege of doing a video series for Edible Magazine. I think you guys have an Edible Magazine in West Virginia. And
I think
called Edible on the Road.
I've seen it in Arizona and Idaho. Yeah.
It's all about farming and stuff. It's called Edible on the Road. And I'm very proud of it. I produced it and hosted it. And it basically showcased farms. And then, like, I was at a bison farm here in Connecticut, which was amazing. And then we were talking all about bison and you're learning how amazing they are. And I made the joke to the farmer, clearly just kidding, right? Making a joke, trying to go for the laugh. And I was like, so when can I ride one? And he looked at me like I had seven heads, chef. And he goes, ride one. And I was like, yeah, I want to get on the back and ride one. And he goes, chef, these are 4-ton animals that can run 50 miles an hour and jump 20 feet in the air. And they have giant swords on their heads. Oh, and P.S., they want to kill you. And I was like, oh, well, thanks for tagging my joke. Okay. So does that mean I'm not riding one?
Oh, man.
It's amazing how, you know, you talk to a guy, like I'm in there being silly, trying to go for the joke, the TV host guy, you know, trying to make the laugh. And I make a joke against this guy, and it wasn't funny to him. He was like, there's nothing funny about what I'm doing here. No.
Yeah.
And yeah, I actually ended up, we were done. I apologized. And I was like, you know, hey, I'm really sorry. I was just trying to make, you know, be silly. And he was like, oh, I was just fucking with you. And I was like, oh, good, man. Thanks. I'm sorry. He goes, they can only run 45 miles an hour. I was like, oh, shit.
Oh, that's great. That's fucking great.
You know, farmers are serious guys, man, and they take very seriously what they do, and we as chefs have responsibility to do the same thing, you know?
Well, and we just take way too much for granted all the time, every day. Like what you just experienced with your power going out for a few days, you know, you get that opportunity to realize, oh, damn, like I'm fortunate, I'm lucky, I'm in the top of the world right now, you know? Like,
yeah.
I get to pull a device out of my pocket and it has all the world's knowledge in it. Now, granted, some of it's bullshit, but, you know, I can weed through that. And it's just amazing. It's amazing what we have at our fingertips. And I feel like we have an obligation to utilize those resources and do something really fucking rad with it.
You're absolutely right. But there is also, I mean, people say things like that, like you just said, and I agree. You're right. We are in that part of the world that makes that happen. But we also work our asses off to make sure that we get to that point where that can be the case. I mean, you know,
no doubt.
Work, I guess, is my point. You know, I mean, a lot of people think that,
hey,
you know, maybe across the country that, you know, this is the land of cowboys and soda pop and we all drink beer and eat steaks all day and laugh at the rest of the world. Well, that's not really the case. I mean, I work my ass off every day. I don't know about you.
Absolutely, brother. And I just had a training with my staff on Saturday and I ended that with, guys, this is all super important. You know, we are working to be the absolute best restaurant in the world. However, keep in mind that everything we do turns to shit in 24 hours.
Yeah. Damn.
It doesn't matter what it is.
That's some pretty deep shit. Hey, favor, say that again. any of you young cooks and young culinarians and culinary school people listening to this right now, I want you to listen to what chefs are like, because God, is it deep. Can you just give it to them?
Yeah, man. No matter what you do, no matter how beautiful that plate is, no matter how good it tastes, it turns to shit in 24 hours.
Holy shit, is that funny, man.
That's a direct quote from my first sous chef that I worked under in the cafeteria. And it's true. You know, and I put everything I am into this all the time, but you're absolutely right. You can't take yourself too seriously. And you know, you can't be humble enough either. It's not about me.
I got a message. Chef Dimitri, who's here in New York, just sent me a message, and he says our entire life's work turns to shit.
and we still love it, and we still put every ounce of ourselves into it. You know, and that's what's great. There's this bitter dichotomy of what we do.
Dude, so true. So tell me about the restaurant, man. So you worked your ass off. We're going to fast forward a little bit here, man, and I want to talk to you about the ski lodge, too, just to let's touch on that for a second before we get to your restaurant. I was recently in – I've always worked in, like, beach areas and, like, along the coastline, and I was recently in Lake Placid and at the very ski area. I was like, you know what, man, it's pretty fucking cool. I could probably work up here, if, you know, if I ever wanted to. I never thought about it that way. You did. Talk about that, man, that experience for you. And where was it?
Man, I love the mountains. A lot of what I was reading when I was a kid was Jack London. I still haven't made it to Alaska, and I hope to ride my bike up there one day. But I was always drawn out west, man. Like, there's a lot of New England I haven't explored yet because I was always setting my sights to the left, you know, and heading towards towards California, towards the northwest. And it was – I lived in a postcard, brother. I'll have to send you some pictures because it was unbelievable. And I worked with a great team. It was a husband-wife team that owned the business where we worked, and it was this old mining town called Galena. And after the mines dried up, it was kind of like a way station, gas station sort of thing for a while. And now it's this cross-country ski hub. And in the summer, they do mountain bike tours and they have trail rides and things like that. And Don Scheffler and Aaron Zell, the guys who run that business, they work their butts off and they really believe in what they're doing. And they were fortunate enough to give me a place to live for several years. And I learned so much off of Chef Don. Because he gave me the room to fuck up, you know, and he held me to high standards, but he also gave me that freedom to learn. And I try to do the same thing with my staff. The only thing that had me moving on from that was just, it was a small business. And at Sous Chef, there was really nowhere else to go unless I knocked Don off, you know, like I wasn't going to move up to head chef. So what now, you know? But I will never forget my time there. I still dream about it all the time, man. It's, you know, we had wolves there. We had brown bear. There were cougar around. I mean, it was for real. It was the wilderness.
Wow. That's awesome.
Yeah. We were also, you know, just 27 miles north of Sun Valley, which is, you know, the first American ski resort, so full of the rich and famous. And I got to kind of hobnob and cook for some of those folks and kind of get over the, you know, being from West Virginia, you never meet anybody famous around here, you know, and kind of get over that. And I feel like that that level of kind of like getting blasé about it really helped out when I got invited to go on Guys Grocery Games, because I was just like, yeah, cool, whatever. It's another gig. Like, I'm going to cook the best I can and, you know, we're a knockout and whatever happens, happens.
Now, how did you do on the show on Grocery Games?
I won.
What season were you?
I won the show. It was season 16.
Nice.
It just aired in February. So, yeah.
Good for you, man. And Guy's a great, he's a great human being. Such a cool cat.
I was super impressed with Guy. And it was Chef Irvine, Chef Artie, Sakara, and Mark Murphy were the three judges. They were all totally rad. The crew was spectacular. Oh, I mean, everything about the experience was great. No?
Yeah, it's a great spot. So I was on season one, episode two, I won, the very first season.
Nice.
Of the show. And we were actually shooting in a real grocery store in the hood in San Bernardino.
Oh, really nice. That's awesome.
Yeah. Season one, and none of us actually really knew what the hell was going on, which was the funniest part of the whole thing. They never told us until, like, even at the end when I'm there and I'm supposed to run to the grocery store and find shit, I had to be like, Chef, what am I supposed to do? And he was like, what, they haven't told you?
Yeah.
I was like, fuck no, dude.
right. Yeah, we were definitely kept in the dark for a lot of stuff, but they figured out quite a bit in 16 seasons, brother.
Yeah, no doubt about it. It was a lot of fun, man. I tell you, and I've done Chopped, I've done Cutthroat Kitchen, I've done all those shows, and by far, Grocery Games was the hardest. It really is.
Really?
No doubt.
Well, I have hopes that I'll be invited back for one thing or another, because it meant so much to this area. I just got a message from a woman the other day about her 4-year-old daughter, and all she does is watch the episode with me in it, and she pretends to be me. And she wants to be a chef now. Yeah, 4-year-old kid, man. Like, how cool is that?
Amazing.
I went and talked to my nephew. My nephew's in second grade, and I went and talked to his class. I mean, it's just huge to give people that goal, you know, or like, I can do more. Like, I can not just live and die here, you know? Like, I don't know. It's what I always hope to see happen was, look, if I can do this, you can do this. I'm doing this because I saw other people do it and I knew that I could do it too. So now it's your turn.
How can you not love Chef? Like, this is awesome. How can you not love this guy? Like, this is what it's about, man. This is exactly what it's about. And hopefully they will give you a buzz back. Food Network's gone through a bunch of drama here lately, and they're still retooling and getting their act together, and we'll see what happens. But I think there may be other things on your agenda coming up that may be bigger for that. So we'll have to talk about that a little bit more. But I want to ask you about the restaurant, man. I want to talk about the restaurant. Like, so here you are, you moved from one location to another. Talk about the restaurant and what you guys are about and kind of the style of food and what's going on over there.
Oh, dude. So I can't say anything about the restaurant without first saying I had no idea what I was doing. It seemed like a good idea at the time. And I've always been a leap before I look guy, and I had just come home after living out west for 5 years, taking a whole year to travel the country. And I was so jazzed up and excited about what I'd seen. And there was this positive energy in the valley that I hadn't seen in a really long time. And I was like, all right, cool. I'm going to put a restaurant in downtown and it's going to bring people into downtown. And that's definitely happened, just a couple weeks ago, I had a couple come in from, it was 4.5 hours away. They drove to come eat my food. And then they stayed in Wheeling for the weekend to check Wheeling out. And like, oh my God, this is exactly 100% the perfect thing I hoped would happen. But it has been brutal. It's such a huge challenge just to make ends meet and to grow the business and to get the recognition, because people just don't even think about it, we all know about location, location, location. And being off the beaten path a little bit, and people work downtown, but at 5 o'clock they roll the sidewalks up, dinner's where it's at. Dinner's where you can really do cool stuff, and dinner's where you really make your money. And we weren't, didn't have anybody in town. So it's been a lot of work. I stopped counting the hours because it was just too depressing, I still don't often take a paycheck, and I live in a 30-year-old RV in my parents' side yard just to keep my costs down as much as possible. And I just hustle, man. I'm after it. I work and I do everything I can to make us the best we can possibly be. And I work at like figuring out how that can be even better, and it's a total discourse. It's a discussion with the community. Like, okay, this is what I want to do. What do you want? Because man, people around here are not ready for bone marrow,
Right. Right. That's crazy.
My number one seller at lunch is chicken salad, brother.
Wow.
But it's a damn good chicken salad. We poach chicken thighs, we rehydrate craisins and white wine, like it's got shallots in it. I mean, it is a banging chicken salad. So that's how I make the concessions. Like, okay, that's what you want, cool. I'm gonna blow it out of the water. I'm gonna do it so fucking well that you've never experienced anything like that before. And it's starting to take hold, And the show with Guy definitely helped out a ton. It's such a huge, huge thing for our area to see someone local do good.
Well, that's what's up, man. It's about taking those opportunities like that and being able to use them to. Here's the thing: like nothing's going to happen on its own. You got to take things like that and do a lot with it. Like you should get yourself on local TV, working hard on local TV every day. You could go on local ABC, NBC station, whatever is a big out where you live. Using your guys' grocery games thing and get yourself doing a weekly spot. They're not going to pay you for it.
Yeah.
But it's amazing.
Right.
It's amazing promotion for the restaurant.
Exposure.
Do.
Yeah.
For that 4-year-old girl. Like, that's something. I mean, that's a great way to get things going. That's what I did for sure. That's exactly how you do it, man. And it's crazy because you talk about a chicken salad, the biggest thing on your lunch menu, but you make it an amazing chicken salad, right? That's what it matters. That's
right,
it matters
exactly.
The right way.
Exactly. Well, and it's so humbling, and I think that's what I love, part of what I love about what we do, because there's a lot of ego involved, and we are fortunate enough to be in, the era where chefs get to be rock stars, and that's super fucking cool. It didn't used to be that way, and it'll probably end at some point. But we're also servants. We're in the service industry. We're here to make people happy. I'm here to work for other people and put their needs above my own. And I love that dichotomy of being the rock star and yet also being, you know, ready to do whatever it takes, you know, within reason to make you happier, to improve your day. You know, like you can eat anything anywhere and survive. But I like to think when you come to my place, you're going to thrive. Like you're getting more out of your cuisine, you know?
Dude, what's the name of your restaurant? I don't think we even said it yet.
It's called Vagabond Kitchen. And I wanted to keep the Vagabond name in it because I still want to travel. I still want to make that part of my business model.
Yeah, Vagabond Kitchen. It's in downtown Wheeling, West Virginia, right?
That's correct. Yeah, we're right off Interstate 70. So it's super easy and convenient for people to pop off the interstate on their way through, you know, if they're traveling. And a lot of people do that. But there's no, like, you know, a lot of times if you're traveling, you'll see the blue attraction sign. And there's some weird state law that we can't actually have that. So if you don't know we're there, you'll drive right through and you'll never know.
Well, that's ridiculous.
You know, but I just had a couple, it's some sort of weird state law and I don't understand it, but I just had a couple come through from Indianapolis. Yeah, no doubt. Get a billboard or something, right? Yeah, this couple coming from Indianapolis stopped by and like, they were practically in tears. They were like, your food is so good. And we're so glad we stopped. And, you know, I can't remember if they had a daughter or a son, but they had a young child who like kept requesting extra sides. Like, can I get some more of that broccoli and some more of that sweet potato hash? And like, they were just so over the top jazzed about it. And I was like, thank you. This is why I do what I do.
That's stuff right there. That's the good stuff. That's the good shit right there. That's the shit that, you know, what you're doing is real.
It keeps you going, man.
Yeah.
On the bad days or, you know, like, when I'm trying to make payroll or, you know, keep the gas on, I think about shit like that and it keeps me going.
All right. Well, you got to make sure we check that out. Vagabond Kitchen. I know next time I'm driving through the area, I'm definitely going to check it out for sure. I'm going to buzz you and I'm going to come down and get me one of them chicken salads. That's my plan.
Yeah, no doubt, brother. I'll cook you some other shit too, you know.
And some sweet potato hash.
right. Well, and to all your listeners, I really encourage everyone to follow me on Instagram and whatever social media you do. That Instagram's how Triple G found out about me. So that's super important to what we're doing. And the more and more we can get the word out, the more we can do.
There you go. And that's at the Vagabond Chef on Instagram. Why are you doing my job? I was going to get to that.
I got excited.
I got
Yeah, we're on Instagram and Twitter under that handle.
Nice. Let me ask you a question, brother. So here where I live, rosé is like a thing. Like everyone, especially out towards the Hamptons and whatnot, rosé is the jam. I'm drinking rosé right now, and I dig it. It's awesome. I really do dig it. And it's one of those things that has we can talk about the amazing immune system qualities it has for your body and what it can do for you. But I want to stick with the basics. It's fucking good, right?
Yeah. So yeah.
Here where it's like beachy and people are, you know, there's lots of, you know, unlike what you said, there's tons of like famous people here and whatnot. And everyone's drinking rosé and we all walk around drinking it. And we try to look amazing doing it. I'm drinking out of a can right now, which is awesome. But is this something that even down in West Virginia, you're finding at the restaurants or any place else you go, are people drinking rosés? Is it a thing down there as well?
I don't think that rosés are a thing. Moonshine, however, is very popular. And I believe it has all of the health benefits, if not more, than rosé. So I highly recommend West Virginia moonshine. Outside of that, whiskey is a big one. But no, we definitely have some wine aficionados. My wine knowledge is so West Coast because of the time I spent in Idaho. Right. I'm still learning the vintners and what's available here in West Virginia. So it's a little weird to me. And honestly, like, correct me if I'm wrong here, chef, but rosé, that's kind of like a white Zinfandel. Is it not?
No, completely.
Like a red Zinfandel. Okay. So help me out here. Tell me what a rosé is.
Yep, so white Zinfandel is more sweet, right? So most rosés are incredibly dry.
Okay.
What happens is they stop the fermentation process when sugar is still in the wine itself. Natural sugars are still in it. That's what makes white Zinfandel, right? It's a very cheap wine to produce. It doesn't take a lot of skill to make a white Zinfandel. However, a great rosé does. So if you get a good, you know, red grape, like a Syrah, a Cabernet Franc, something like that, even when you take these white red grapes and you squeeze them, that juice is still clear, okay? It's still a clear juice. Uh-huh. So in order to get that color, whether it's red wine or a rosé, it comes from the skin of the grapes, right? So you actually let it sit anywhere from 2 hours to 24 hours. Usually 24 is going to be the most for a rosé. It's going to add that pink color to it, right? And it's also going to add some tannins and amazing flavors like grapefruit, blood orange, like a really like a white cherry or any of those kind of crazy stone fruits that you might think of. But none of it's too heavy, but it's very, 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 very dry, right? Where a white Zinfandel is much sweeter, much sweeter.
We have a challenge here in West Virginia because our growing season is so short that we end up with a very sweet wine for everyone that's doing wine here in the state. And I think you and I both know that sweeter wines are tend to be viewed as cheaper wines. You know, whether or not that's true.
Depends on the grape you look at some cold weather grapes like a Demeanor or Riesling, very German grapes like that, are actually hard to grow, but produce phenomenal wines that have, you know, characters of honey, apricot, and things like that going on in them. And Canadian ice wine also is another very cold weather, short growing season, but the grapes usually grow through what's called, they call it the first frost, where the grapes actually will freeze, and I'm sure they probably do it down where you live, too. The grapes actually go through the first frost, and then when they thaw out, you know, what happens is we lose a lot of that moisture, leaving back residual sugars, and that's when they press them. And you get amazing, almost
that's really
consistencies to your wine before you ferment them, so it gets amazing flavors to it.
Well, that is really interesting, and that makes me think of Johnny Appleseed, and you know why that guy was so popular, right?
Johnny Appleseed?
Yeah, it wasn't because he was growing apples to eat, man. They were making booze out of those apples.
Giant cock. Oh, I was going a different direction.
if you take your apple cider, unpasteurized apple cider, and you leave that out and let it freeze, then you can separate out the alcohol from it and Applejack and get a real nice, very easy to make buzz off of that.
There you go. So what's a good summer drink in West Virginia, man? Like, and what's a good summer drink in West Virginia that's like a staple? And what's a drink of your choice for the summertime?
Oh, man. Well, we are blowing up in this state with craft breweries, which is so cool to see right now. We've got 24 or 28 different craft breweries in the state. I'm actually on the committee for the Mountaineer Brew Fest that in its fourth year. August, we have this big celebration for one day, and it's craft breweries from the tri-state area, but specifically from West Virginia. So a lot of good beers coming out around here. We have a few distilleries, you know, and I'm always a big fan of a good G&T for summertime drinking.
For sure.
Do the pale ales, the IPAs, that kind of thing also. Like I said, our wines tend to be a little more on the sweet side, which isn't necessarily my palate for wines, but they are, you know, pretty tasty. But yeah, man, the good old sweet ambrosia, you know, sweet corn moonshine, man, that's where it's all at. You can't get that anywhere.
First of all, when we get done, I'm going to call you and you're going to send me your address. I'm going to send you, I have a bottle of something from a distillery up here that I'm good friends with. I want to send you something.
I will be more than happy to trade.
But for me, I'm a beer guy, and I had been, when we were hanging out, I didn't have beer. I was trying not to drink beer because I'll drink 95 of them. And that's a lot of calories in that.
I have the same problem.
To really ease up on it. Yeah, I love fucking beer. And you're right, the craft beer thing is really taking off. I think every state is starting to happen. We have 74 microbrews in our tiny state right now. It's really, really
That's amazing. In Connecticut.
Bro, it's amazing. And we're going to get known for that because our state is starting to offer incredible tax breaks for people who start breweries. So just you'll see a company called Two Roads Brewing Company very soon near you. That's one of ours. They're huge.
I think I've tried Two Roads. Yeah.
I might have. They're literally 5 miles from my house. It's amazing what's happening.
That's fantastic.
But I think it's great. I think you're seeing, especially as a chef, seeing things like that happen. It's just cool. I think it goes to what we were saying before, how people are starting to have more of an appreciation and want good product, you know? we're done with having the Coors Light Budweiser. We want locally made things. I think we're seeing that more and more, or else we wouldn't be seeing these microbreweries popping up all over the place, even in both of our small states.
Right. Right. Well, and it's even worse now that AB InBev out of Brazil is buying up everything, you know, and they're dumbing down all the recipes. So even when you drink a American light beer, it's not the American light beer you would have drank when you were in, you know, junior high. It's this new rice beer bullshit equivalent, you know, and it's taking a bad thing and making it worse.
I can feel you getting angry about it.
I'm a passionate guy, man.
Well, speaking of passion, you heard me getting a little angry about things having the wrong name here in the intro in the front of the show. And I have a couple of the things I want to run by you and see what you think about it. First of all, before we get into it, is a hot dog a sandwich or is it a fucking hot dog?
All right, man, I'm going with sandwich. I'm going with sandwich. And this is how I'm getting there. Is a meatball hoagie a sandwich?
Well, it's a hoagie. Hoagie's a sandwich.
A hoagie's a sandwich, right? And a meatball hoagie looks a lot like a fucking hot dog.
But it's not a sausage.
Well,
he's like, I mean, fuck.
It's a Frankfurter.
It's a Frankfurter. That was good. All right, we'll leave it at that. You say yes, I say no. We'll leave it at that. But let me ask you about this.
That's how I want to be, man. I like opposing the status quo, brother. It's your show, you're right, but I'm going to oppose you.
No, it's okay. I love it. Let's talk about pork butt. Pork butt. You're from down south. I grew up down south.
Yeah.
Pork butt's delicious. We make pulled pork with it. We smoke it. We hit it with a little vinegar sauce.
Right.
At least in my world, that's what we would do.
Right.
Delicious stuff. But it has nothing to do with the butt. Nothing.
Oh, dude, I get in arguments with my staff all the time about this. And this is the way I learned it. And it could be wrong because I'm definitely still have a lot to learn, man. So I'm humble about that. But a pork shoulder is one piece of meat. Two of those shoulders together in a package is a pork butt because it looks like a butt.
I love it.
That's the way I knew it. So if I'm ordering, three pork butts, that is six pieces of meat, man.
Wow. That's fucking genius right there, dude. You hit the corner and that never happened. You're right. You're absolutely
I don't know if that's like real or if that's just something I made up in my head, you know, but like, that's what it means to me. A pork shoulder is one, a pork butt is two.
You have a microphone right now, so you're right. Don't worry. No one can argue that. That's pretty fucking smart. Wow. I'm going to look into that. So I'm going to leave that one on the side.
All right.
This is a stupid one, but lady fingers, right? I mean, obviously, these little like tiny keys are probably the size of a lady's finger is the idea of where they come from. But can we come up with a different name? Like, lady finger sounds terrible. Let's give them a different name. What about, spongy cookie?
They're just not as sweet as lady's fingers tend to actually be, is my problem with it.
Right. And that's a whole other episode itself, talking about sweet lady fingers.
That's taking you back to my Patreon. Like, come check that shit out. It'll help me out a lot, guys. I appreciate it.
That's right. Let's talk about Cool Whip, right? A favorite of grandmother everywhere, right?
There is nothing cool about Cool Whip.
Cool Whip. I like how you did that. Cool Whip. Nice Family Guy reference. It's no cream in it at all. It's just imitation made with water, corn syrup, vegetable oil, and a tiny bit of skim milk. That's what Cool Whip is.
Go on record with this microphone that I have this evening and saying that it's fucking disgusting.
Yes.
It is not hard to make real whipping cream. Like, to make it yourself is not difficult.
No.
Even if you turn it into butter, that's not the end of the world. Like, that'll be really good butter.
It's delicious, right? So here's the story. So I do caterings, and I'm always like, hand whipped cream when I describe the dessert. And they're like, oh, really? Wow. What a great talking point. You pour a little Bailey's in it after you whip it up, and you got soft peaks, throw a little Bailey's in it, fold that shit in there, whip it up a little more. People blows their minds. Like, he was in there whipping that up with a whisk and a metal bowl the whole time. So amazing. He's so great.
Right. One of my cooks, Bo, does it with Jameson, and it is fan-fucking-tastic, brother. You got to have it.
Wow. That sounds great, man, actually. But, yeah, you do things like that, and customers love it, man. They see you doing it, like, fuck, that's amazing. And you're like, it's not really that big of a deal.
Well, it's convenience. You know, we've been sold tons of horrible things based on convenience. You know?
Yeah, for
sure. And then you take the skill away from the skill set goes, you know, and then people don't even know how to whip it anymore. They don't know how to make their own whipped cream. So then they have to buy Cool Whip. Otherwise, there's no whipped cream. You know, it's brilliant. It's a long game. I would not be surprised if that was their goal all along.
Respect to Cool Whip. There we go. Respect to Cool Whip. Hey, you know what we're gonna do? We're gonna give. Cool, shit, I can't find my sound effects board. It would be much cooler if, like, you had said that, and then I shot the gunshot off and said respect to Cool Whip. But I'm not quick enough on the board to find the fucking sound effects. Let's do that or the wine.
What else you got?
Respect to Cool Whip. There we go.
There you go.
Respect to Cool Whip. Oh yeah, there you go. All right, so here we go. So moving down the list, peanuts. An amazing thing. Peanuts are delicious. I love peanuts. I'm sure you love peanuts.
Yeah.
Not actually a
nut
at all.
Yeah.
Not a nut at all. It's a legume. It's actually a seed.
Yep.
Which is amazing.
But, yeah. They're tasty. You know, I mean, they're tasty seeds.
Delicious, right? We all love them. They're delicious. Honey roasted, salted. That's delicious. It's a really great snack, but not a nut. Not a nut at all.
Yeah.
But how else would you describe that as a sales technique to somebody? How would you sell it? Hey, I have these.
So,
the seeds that I want you to eat. That sounds gross.
Is the peanut plant called a peanut? I don't know.
Well, they're legumes. They're seeds that grow inside a pod. It's like beans.
Right. I get that part. But, like, what is the plant called? Can you call it like a sunflower seed grows a sunflower? Does a peanut grow a pea? I don't bet that it does.
That's a good-ass question right there. We should look that up because I want to know. I'm going to stick with peanuts. I think it sounds great. I like it. All right, next up here on the list we have, for fuck's sake, this is a ridiculous one, Puppy Chow. And now we're not talking about the kibble you feed your dog every morning. Puppy Chow, also known as Muddy Buddies, it's a snack mix made by tossing Chex cereal with peanut butter, melted chocolate, and powdered sugar. Basically, it's deliciousness in a bowl. Sounds amazing.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds good. It sounds like a trail mix kind of thing. That's new to me.
Yeah, that's a new thing to me. But yeah, I think when you find anything, you toss it with peanut butter and chocolate, it's going to be delicious.
Yeah, and if it's not, you're really doing it wrong.
Yeah, no doubt about it. You're definitely doing it wrong. Well, there you go. I think we figured things out. I think between last week, we decided that if you're going to call something local, it needs to be within a 4-hour bike ride of where you live. I think that's pretty good.
I like
right?
that definition.
Yeah.
Well, we have a hard time around here because if you're from, like, a different holler, you're a goddamn foreigner around here. So local is, like, super uber specific, man. So, you know.
Holy shit. A different holler. Well, bro,
but then you
got to
look at, like.
You, man.
Yeah, thank you, brother. I appreciate it.
Dude, finish your story. Sorry, I jumped in there. I thought you were done, but finish your story.
No, you're good, bro. You're good. I'm just saying, we kind of have to look with a local thing as to how far away our food is actually coming from, which is scary. Right. It, halfway amazing. Across the world, this shit's traveling to us.
It's amazing. But in most of these grocery stores these days, or even most of your purveyors, even the big ones like Sysco and U.S. Foods, if you ask them for local stuff, they'll give you a list of what they can get locally.
Yeah, no, I work a lot with Sysco, and they do a good job of aggregating the, like, medium-sized farms that are local, you know, within, and I would say, and this might not jive with your definition, but I would say within a couple hundred miles, I'm pretty happy.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It depends on where you're at. When I'm working in the summer out in Montauk, like, it needs to be within, like, a 10-mile radius to me, and I can pretty much work all of that because there's so many farms and fishermen and there's a local beef farm. I can
do
so much with just that, which is pretty awesome, which hopefully one day we can get you up here to check out, man, because I think you'd dig it. Get you on that motorcycle.
Dude, I would love to. Absolutely.
Mm. Brother, what a fun conversation tonight, man. I really enjoyed this. It's been a lot of fun just talking.
Hey, me as well, man. Thank you so much, and I really appreciate everybody listening. I hope everyone enjoyed it as much as I did because I had a blast.
Dude, make sure you follow Chef. At The Vagabond Chef on Instagram and, of course, on Twitter as well. And check out the restaurant, The Vagabond Kitchen. Chef's got some big things coming up, man. I got a feeling this guy, we haven't seen the last of him. He's going to be around. He's a good talker. He's got great stories. And, yeah, we're definitely not done with Matt yet. That's for damn sure.
Well, I'm like a bad penny, man. Or, you know, what is that saying?
I don't know. I don't know where I was going to go. That was pretty crazy.
I don't know. I keep turning up, man. I won't quit. I won't stop. And I'm going to do everything I can to do something amazing with the life that I've been given. And, I mean, it would have been very, very simple for me to just have not made it through being born, brother. So I got a lot to do.
Well, dude, I love your outlook. I love your take on life. I love the way you look at things. And I wish nothing but more success for you. And we'll talk to you on down the road.
Thank
all
you.
Right, brother.
Yeah, you bet, man. Thank you so much.
My man. All right, take care. There he goes, guys. The one and only Vagabond Chef, Matt Welsh. What a great guy, man. I could talk to that guy for the 2 hours here, man. That'd been crazy. But his stories are amazing. Make sure you follow him, of course, at the Vagabond Chef on Instagram. What a great guy. A lot of fun talking to him. I look forward to seeing him on down the road and getting involved. Make sure you please do me a favor, ladies and gentlemen. I appreciate you checking the program out this evening. A lot of fun talking to you. Please rate, review, and subscribe on Instagram. Not on Instagram, on iTunes. Why'd I say that? And remember, food is one of the most important things we have in life. Everything important in life revolves around food. Let's make sure we give it the time it deserves. See you next Monday. Peace.
I came to play. There's a price to pay. Time for you to get down on your knees. I came to play.